House Labor and Commerce Committee convenes at 3:20, and today's date is January 24th, Monday, 2005. And we only have one bill before us today. We have a few in the hopper that are being looked at that we heard last week. Today we just have House Bill 15, and that is Representative Meyer's bill. And if he wants to come up, I see his staff's with him, and present that. You're welcome to come up too, Mike, if you want. And we have a few people to testify today. It looks like people like Doug Griffin, ABC Board, and I'm not sure if anyone else is. I know Representative Roperg is online. And Representative Crawford, do we have him online? No? Okay, so just Representative Roperg. We do have a quorum with Representative Lynn, Ledoux, Guttenberg, and myself, Chairman Anderson, present. And Representative Roperg has been excused again on teleconference, and so has Representatives Crawford and Cott. So go ahead, Representative Meyer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. Appreciate you hearing our bill today. The bill before you is House Bill 15, and it pertains to the sale of alcohol at remote lodges. Currently, at these remote lodges, they have three options. They can either give their guests free of charge alcohol if their guests want it, or their guests can bring it with them, or what may be happening is that they may be serving the alcohol and charging them, which is basically illegal. And that's one of the things we want to deal with today, Mr. Chairman, because it's a difficult situation for these lodge owners. They're trying to provide their guests with with wine or beer, whatever their guests want. At the same time, the wholesalers who are selling the beer and wine to these lodges, they want to make sure that the lodges have the authority and the license and basically are doing everything legally. Under the current system, if a lodge wants to sell alcoholic beverages to their guests, they would have to get a full dispensary license, which is $2,500. And then if they wanted to sell off-sale beer, wine, or alcoholic beverages, that'd be another $1,500. So it's $4,000 for a two-year license or ability to sell these alcoholic beverages at these seasonal fishing, hunting lodges. So what this bill is going to do, it creates a new seasonal alcoholic beverage license for hunting and fishing lodges. And what it's going to do is combine the two licenses into one that would serve and sell alcoholic beverages to overnight guests. So in other words, you have to spend the night there in order to qualify for a lodge, so that way we don't run into a problem with these lodges trying to compete with maybe a bar that's not too far away. The key here is that you have to spend the night in order to qualify for this type of license. Also, as the bill is currently written, you would have to, the lodge would could only be, the license could only be good for 6 months per calendar year. And again, it would only be for people who spend the night. The advantage to these lodges to get this license is twofold. First of all, it's a lot cheaper if they get this license, because we're asking that based on the and you'll hear from the ABC board today, they're recommending $1,250 for a two-year license, which would be about $625 per year, versus, as I mentioned earlier, if they got the two separate licenses, it'd be almost $4,000 per year. So it's a lot cheaper for them to do it this way. Second, it provides them with an opportunity now to charge their guests for drinks, which provides them with additional revenue. The definition that we're using in this bill for a seasonal hunting or fishing lodge is as follows. It's defined as a resort facility that provides lodging, food, and outdoor hunting or fishing guiding services to its registered overnight guests that is not directly accessible by automobile. Now that was the best definition that we could come up with by the time we put this bill together. We've since been in contact with the ABC board, and I think you'll hear from them. They have some suggested changes to that. You also hear from Brown Jug, who is the wholesaler that supplies a lot of these remote villages, or excuse me, remote lodges. And I think rather than taking questions at this time, I'd like, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, go ahead and let go ahead and take the testimony, because I think a lot of questions you'll have will be answered by both the ABC director and from some of the wholesalers. And then after that, we can take questions. And I know there's some amendments that we want to make to the bill. I think you have a copy of those.
Okay.
So if
Thank
that's okay with you.
Meyer.
Okay.
Yeah, but then we'll defer questions until the ABC board director speaks. Doug Griffin, are you online, Doug?
I believe I am. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Sure. Welcome. State your name for the record, and why don't you go ahead and assess the bill from ABC board's perspective, and then the amendment. There are several amendments, so we don't want to be confusing for the record. It looks like Representative Roepberg, though he is not here attending the meeting, has left an amendment that we will decide if we want to address today or not. And then, of course, the sponsor has his recommended amendment through you. So why don't you go ahead and discuss first the bill and then the amendment, Doug.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, for the record, my name is Doug Griffin, G-R-I-F-F-I-N. I am the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, speaking to you today from my office in Anchorage. We welcome the offering of this bill by Representative Myers. Lodges have been kind of fall in a crack within the present licensing scheme in Alaska. It's probably time to look at them in terms of meeting the increase in the growth of this industry in Alaska. Representative Myers is correct in that there is a way to be licensed to serve alcoholic beverages as a lodge owner, but it is a bit unwieldy and expensive. And we think that this is a good proposal as a starting place, and obviously the whole legislative process is about refining, and we say right up front that the ABC board and the staff of the ABC board, we certainly do not have all the answers, and welcome input from lodge people that are a lot more familiar with the operation of lodges, and certainly legislators and anyone else that wants to weigh in. We do have some thoughts mainly from a regulatory perspective. Since we've been placed in the Department of Public Safety by Governor Murkowski, we've really taken on a lot more of a enforcement, bent, and which is a good thing, I think. But it has brought to the forefront where do lodges stand? People that either provide alcoholic beverages as part of the package price, or some other in some other way, and many without the benefit of any kind of a license, and so of course many of these licenses operate in rural parts of the state, which have problems regarding alcohol. Many communities, maybe nearby communities, with that are dry villages and so forth. So it does create a public policy best for us to try to weigh all the factors and come up with a balanced piece of legislation. So, like I say, I don't think I have all of the answers by a long shot. I think the one place where the board is coming from, the one piece of this bill that I think is not negotiable from the board's perspective is the limitation, because basically everything else sort of hangs on it, is the limitation that the service of alcohol be limited to overnight guests only. We have begun, as a board, we can place conditions on licenses, and so we have sort of begun this almost as a way of doing business, in that people come in that want to get liquor licenses for a lodge. We've begun putting a condition that they only be able to sell to registered guests only, overnight guests only. So that's really, that is, I think, the one thing that's really critical, because as we go forward, we're saying, well, maybe we need to relax some other standards, such as the population requirement. The main way that we regulate liquor licenses and liquor in the state of Alaska is by limiting them by population. What you may have, however, are good fishing areas where you have a small village which, by our population requirement, should only have one liquor license, if it's not voted to go dry, one liquor license of each type. That doesn't really work for lodges where you may have several lodges and maybe the first one in the door gets the only license that's allowed for that based on the population limitations under ASO 411-400. So there are some provisions under AS 11-400 that relax population for tourism licenses and for public convenience licenses for restaurants that serve beer and wine as part of a restaurant operation. So we think a similar exception needs to be made for lodges. But again, the reason that we feel comfortable making that exception for population is that we're focusing on a business that is not serving the community at large or nearby residents or any residents for that matter. We're only talking about being able to provide alcohol service to the registered guests. I recognize Representative Myers is really wants, and lodges is one of those things that everybody thinks they know what it is. I guess you know it when you see it, sort of like the Supreme Court Justice's definition on pornography. You can't describe it, but you know what it is when you see it. And I think we've run into a similar challenge here about not wanting to be too narrow in defining lodges, but also not wanting to open it up so that some establishment here in downtown Anchorage can apply for a lodge license, which is certainly not in keeping with the intent, I'm sure, of the sponsor, and certainly goes beyond the scope of what the board would be looking at. However, we in our comments to Representative Meyer, we did think that there may be some expansion that would be beneficial or should at least be considered by the committee and the legislature as a whole. We have, and this is just based on sort of anecdotal experience we have dealing with, we do have some people coming in the door that have a lodge that want to get some kind of a liquor license, and so this is not based on any kind of broad-based survey or anything, but we do have some businesses that are looking at expanding their lodge operations beyond the typical summer months, you know, sort of the May, June, July, August time period, either to expand their lodge into the hunting season, to take in some of the shoulder season, or to try to expand, you know, the use of their facility to maybe do some wildlife viewing and other things that are not peak, that are not peak fishing season. And then there's some, we've been approached by some that are even interested in doing some kind of winter recreation. So we've suggested that maybe that be expanded and still provide an option for the seasonal lodge operation, which is provided for under ASO 411-680, where someone can get just a seasonal license good for 6 months during a 12-month period and basically pay a half price for the lodge license. So that's one suggestion. The other thing is that is looking at the fee. Again, the fact, and we certainly don't want to reduce revenue to the state, but we also don't want to make this so expensive that it's that we can't reasonably sell it as a product, a license to people that should have a license. The fact, again, that we're limiting the sale of the alcoholic beverages to guests only, you're not really going to be selling. You're not going to have land office business. Even if you're a fairly large lodge, the fact that you're only looking at service to guests only, we did think that for at least the board raised the possibility that maybe we want to look at some other type of fee arrangement. Suggested maybe to do that on a per-room basis. We suggested $250 per room. Again, that would be for a full-year license and could be cut in half by if it's just a seasonal operation. The other thing, again, getting back, I'll finish my discussion again, maybe talking in skirt circles, but come back to sort of the crux of this lodge license and the definition of a lodge. I see Representative Meyer has taken the approach of trying to sort of define remote, being that that it's off the road system, or I that's the way I interpret is not being directly accessible by an automobile. We do have some lodges that are pretty remote, but you can drive to them. They may be off the Denali Highway. They may be at the end of a 20, you know, off the Parks Highway, but you still got to drive another 20 miles on a gravel road. There's some lodges we're familiar with down on the Funny River, for example, down the Kenai Peninsula, that are pretty remote. You've got to maybe have four-wheel drive or something to get to them, but you can drive to them. And again, that's, you know, that's a public policy call of, on the part of the legislature to decide how they want to define that. I understand the concern about not defining it well enough so that, again, urban places would go for this because they only want to serve guests only anyway or something like that, when they don't really meet what would customarily be considered the other definition for a lodge. So I think that's up for discussion to try to resolve that, and we're certainly happy to work with you on that. At that, I'll just conclude my my comments and be happy to answer any questions you might have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Doug. I'll just begin by concurring with you that at first blush, this bill appears that it corrects something, and I think almost appears to be consumer protective nature. The caution, though, is the notes that you made regarding definition of a lodge and how detailed we want to be. I was looking at statistics or forced statistics on the number of lodges that would be affected should the bill go through, and per the new definition being recommended. Also, it would be nice to know if there is a devaluation of current liquor licenses. For instance, I can think of places that I have been to, maybe in King Salmon or in rural Alaska, other areas where there are, quote, lodges already existing who have full dispensary licenses, which are worth between $100,000 to $150,000, where then someone can come in and secure one of these type permits to distribute and sell alcohol, and then maybe cause a problem, or again a devaluation of those other liquor licenses at nearby lodges or hotels. And so that definition getting secured and tightened is important. I think in this legislation, finding out the effect on other lodges in the state. And then also it would be nice to know, and I recognize Representative Meyer certainly wants to keep the bill moving through the process, and I agree, but it would be nice to know what State Char, and I know Mr. Shin, who owns Brown Jug, was the president of State Char, so that doesn't always mean Char agrees, and he's a distributor, and then you have the wholesalers, and you have kind of the mix of parties that are members of Alaska Char, and then of member Char's Anchorage Interior here in Juneau, and then of course you have ARBA, the Restaurant Beverage Association. So at least hearing from the State Char and from ARBA would be nice if they could submit something in the next few days so we have an idea what they feel with their members. With that being said, Doug, I don't know if that was a question or just a concern that I hope you assess. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Ledoux.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what road system means. I mean, like Kodiak is kind of off, the entire island of Kodiak is kind of off the road system, although of course we do have state roads there. But then you go into the villages surrounding Kodiak, and they do have roads there, although I don't think they're state roads. But how, basically I'm just trying to figure out how that would impact mostly the villages surrounding Kodiak Island. And I also am trying to figure out, and maybe this is an entirely separate question, does this expand the number of people who are able to get a lodge licenses, or does it merely mean that the people who are already able to get those licenses can get them on a biennial basis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ledoux, there's several questions there, and may have to have Doug help me at least on the on the licenses and the biannual basis. One of the amendments we do hope to make is to eliminate the mention about a road system, you know, because as Mr. Griffin said, it shouldn't matter. There are some remote lodges that you can get to by road. So I think that's an amendment we'd like to make, and then that'll take care of the question that you have there. As far as whether or not these lodges now can go ahead and get, I think, Doug, if I recall, aren't all licenses done on a biannual basis currently?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so the only difference that this would make is that now instead of getting the two separate licenses, a dispensary license and a package license, they could just get this seasonal lodge license. So they can get two licenses with one in with this bill.
But would this bill allow entities, lodges, that previously did not qualify under state law to get any type of a license, to get a license?
In other words, Representative Meyer, you have Kevin's Lodge in Talkeetna, and you have five beds, and it's for fishing, and you have a fishing guide, and you've never sold liquor there. Your point is, then, will this afford that lodge the ability to now sell liquor by applying and getting certified?
Well, I guess my question is, if under current law, Kevin's Lodge is not permitted to get a license because, let's say, it's in a damp village or a dry village, or for some other reasons, Kevin's Lodge doesn't qualify for a dispensary license. Would Kevin's Lodge, does this expand the number of entities or lodges that are permitted to get licenses?
Now I'm going to ask Josh to remember to send to Kevin's wife this transcript. Yeah. She's going to say, when did we buy a lodge?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Ledoux, I think you're asking an excellent question there. Again, referring to Kevin's Lodge here. If I wasn't, for maybe population reasons or whatever, able to get a dispensary license or even a package license, would I now be able to get a seasonal lodge license? Is that correct? Doug, can you help out on that one?
Sure. Well, if you can't, I guess the answer is it depends. I mean, depending on the circumstances. I don't see this allowing someone to be able to get a license if they're within the jurisdiction of a dry village or a damp community that has banned sale by local option. So those people are just still out of luck. But most of these lodges I think that we're talking about are even far away from villages. They're on a river somewhere. If there is a population limitation, because there is, say, a community nearby that's not dry or damp, then with the amendment that I suggested, where there be some type of a population exception made for these businesses, then yes, it would allow someone, perhaps under that scenario, to get a lodge, to get a license that they might not. Of course, there is no lodge license now, but they might, at this point, say in Elfin Cove or someplace, not be able to get any other kind of liquor license that might be available, a restaurant eating place or a package store or a beverage dispensary license, because they're limited by population. So if we do some type of a population relief segment, then that is a possibility. So I guess the question is, it sort of depends, depending on the exact scenario. It might allow someone to get a license who wouldn't be able to get one now. I think, again, the bigger issue is that we've got lodges operating, dispensing alcohol, either selling it or putting into the package, giving it away or whatever, that should, I think, be come under the regulatory framework. And so it provides places that could get licenses. They choose not to because of the hassle of it or the expense and both. That we would now act, and because our regulatory framework is not very well conceived to accommodate them, if we do come up with a program, a license that is more to their operation, then they really don't have any excuse to not get licensed, and I think that's to the good of the state to have them at least be regulated.
Well, then, Doug, this is Representative Anderson. Then I'll supplement Representative Ledoux's question by throwing out the hypothetical. Let's say in the Matsu Valley, we now afford this licensure to a lodge who previously didn't distribute or sell alcohol, or if they did, it wasn't under any statutory construct. And now they do that. Could people, the way the bill is written now, or even amended, as Representative Myers asking, could non-guests purchase alcohol? Meaning, hey, let's not go to bar X or hotel Y, let's go to hypothetical lodge because now they sell alcohol as well.
Mr. Chairman, I think I can answer that one. I'm sure Doug can too. The key word there is that you have to be a guest. Okay. In other words, you have to spend the night in order to qualify or be able to drink alcoholic beverages at this particular lodge. And I think that's something to keep in mind too when we compare this license compared to full dispensary license. Full dispensary license allows you to basically run as a bar and serve anybody anytime during the hours. But in this case, with this type of license, you would have to have the guests would have to spend the night in order for you to be able to serve them alcohol.
And it would be the full dispensary, like a full liquor license, meaning not just beer and wine. It would be all alcohol and beverages.
That's correct. But again, you wouldn't really go to this lodge like you would a bar because you have to spend the night there in order to be able to drink.
And it's for accommodations and probably either hunting or fishing.
It's for
not
outdoor
for
recreation.
Transit type thing. Yes. Okay. Representative Ledoux, then Guttenberg, I think, had a question.
Is this type of license available now on an annual basis, or is this just doesn't simply exist right now?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Ledoux, that is correct. It does not exist at the current time. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get a license for these remote lodges so that they don't have to get all these other licenses that they really don't need because they're not a bar. And the reason why we're doing it biannual is just to make it consistent with all the other licenses that fall under Title IV.
And one more supplement. Gabrielle always helps me with other thoughts. And with her question, then once we have this, should the bill pass in order, then one, in terms of consumer protection, it would ensure that lodges, if they are selling, have been licensed and have had a background check by the ABC board and are in full compliance and are paying an annual fee, biannual in this case, but are paying that. And those that are not will either be denied or, if they're selling without the license, would be sanctioned then. And there would be, per statute under ABC, laws. Is that correct, Doug? They would be then violating the law if they didn't have the license under your statutory makeup?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. If they're selling or providing alcoholic beverages without a sale without a license, so that's the way we would see it. That's why we think we welcome this bill from Representative Meyer to try to bring, the lodge owners have an argument that we don't have a very good license that meets their needs. Well, they won't. With this, enactment of this bill will remove that excuse. We bring them in, you're right, the criminal background checks, the alcohol server training, all of those things which we think is a public safety, welfare benefit to the state of Alaska.
And then in terms of enforcement, because of your limited budget, I recognize the limitations there. The best way someone would be caught is likely to be turned in because your agents can only go to so many lodges within a year, I presume. So that's not a guarantee that someone would get caught, but it certainly ensures that there'll be a more of a microscope approach over violators.
Well, of course, now that we're part of public safety and we're doing more and more training of troopers and wildlife protection officers and so forth, we're getting a closer and closer relationship as each month that goes by and we become more at home here in the Department of Public Safety. we do have actually have a lot long the long arm of the law is extending with regard to alcohol control too, and as I kind of touched on in earlier testimony but didn't dwell on it, was this has sort of come back to us as we've got troopers and wildlife protection officers out there seeing who do get to these lodges. Yeah, we would never have the budget. That's sort of the running joke in our office. We all volunteer to go undercover at some $900 a day lodge someplace to see if they're violating, you know, Title IV. But we just, you folks have never been generous enough to budget us to a level to allow us that level of enforcement.
Because we wouldn't.
But we are getting feedback from our comrades in arms in the Department of Public Safety out there about, well, what are these guys doing when sometimes they're not licensed and they do have alcohol. So we'd rather have them in the system, and we haven't sanctioned anybody. But once we have a license that meets their needs and is reasonably priced, and they may object to things like alcohol server training or the criminal background check. But hey, too bad, you're in the business of selling alcohol. We think those are appropriate safeguards for the public. We could start sanctioning these people, and that would very quickly get them into the program. So that's where we're coming from. We think that the passage of a bill that meets the unique needs of lodges will go a long way to helping us have a better regulatory handle on them.
And Representative Ledoux mentioned a marginally, what was it, a wet and dry, so a damp community. What happens in that instance? Does the community, borough, city, whatever class city it is, do they have to adopt a provision to allow this, or would the state statutory authority preempt that?
Well, the local option, Mr. Chairman, the local option provisions, and maybe we actually need to go back and revisit them to add lodges to the laundry list. It allows local governments the ability to really customize. They can ban all kinds of liquor sales except for one, or if you ever read that part of the local option, they have quite a bit of flexibility there. But if it's a damp community, and again, we're probably talking about a borough that's restricted things on a really large area, because we would not see this as countermanding or overriding any kind of local option that's been, if they voted to ban sale, but maybe allow importation, which is the definition of a damp community, then we would not see this as trumping that local decision. However, they could go back to the ballot box through a local option and maybe make an exception for lodges if they chose to do that. But I think we would still look at the boroughs and the local government. If you're within a local government, we would look at that local government having a say. For example, right now, when a license comes up for renewal, it gets sent out to these. We would have probably quite a few of these, like in the Lake and Peninsula Borough. They would get a chance every 2 years to protest the license if they feel that they're not operating in the public interest. And that's a very appropriate. That's what that's the shot they have at every lodge, at every license within their jurisdiction.
Okay, thanks, Doug. Let's go to Representative Guttenberg, then back to Ledoux.
I think a couple of questions. One observation, just thinking about how some of these would work. Somebody's at a $1,000 a day lodge and they come in after fishing all day and trying to sit down and have a cocktail with their dinner and bringing the guide in who might be affiliated with the lodge or just an employee, and one person can drink and one person can't. It seems like it's something that would be pretty awkward. Just a question about to Mr. Griffin on the license fee of $1,250. What's the enforcement difference do you see between a full-time facility operating year-round and one of these seasonal licenses? Do you see the expense of being any different? I mean, do you get into every facility in town once a year, twice a year? How often do you see getting out to these remote sites? And what I'm trying to figure out is judging the license fee versus the actual expense. I know they will be complaining about how expensive it is, but I'm trying to see how much, what it's really going to cost.
Okay. Representative Gruttenberg, through the chair, we probably won't get out to the village. I mean, unless we get some big increases in our budget, we probably won't get out to lodges. I mean, again, we look at when we travel to remote communities, usually we're going to go to places where there are several licenses. It would probably be on a complaint basis only. We would probably rely quite a bit on a regional trooper or perhaps even a wildlife protection officer in the vicinity to do for us just to make it more economical. I'm not so sure in terms of enforcement. Places that we can get to easier, they see us a lot more than places that are remote. That's just the nature of the economics and surviving on a very, very tight budget that the ABC board has. And I can't say that someone getting a lodge license is going to guarantee that they get a visit from us. But just like we have bars in remote parts of the state that we don't get to either, again, because of budget constraints. We are working with the Commissioner of Public Safety to try to set up a system. He's as you know, as some of you may know that get involved with the public safety budget. Commissioner Tandeski is always trying to utilize wildlife protection officers during those times of the year when they may not be as busy with their wildlife protection duties, and we have enlisted him to maybe to use some of those officers to do inspections, and so yeah, we'd like to get to the point where we would do an inspection once every two-year cycle of every license in the state. That's kind of a long-term goal we have, but a lot of that relies on funding. So they might get visited by someone from the Department of Public Safety, but it would probably not be an ABC investigator.
Representative Meyer, did you have a response to Representative Guttenberg's question?
I'll finish that after.
Yeah. Okay. Another one, Mr. Griffith. You talked about when a license was up in 2 years and a local community had the option to object to a renewal. How often does that happen where a local community objects to a license being renewed and it actually isn't renewed?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, it does not get protested very often by a local governing body. I'd say when and if it does get protested, sometimes they're very cut and dry, like for non-payment taxes or something like that. That's sort of a slam dunk, and usually that situation gets addressed prior to us revoking their license. There's due process considerations, which you afford people a lot of opportunities to get their shortcomings addressed before they lose their license. I would say when a license is protested by a local government that there's a good chance that we will at least initiate, a very, very good chance that we'll at least initiate proceedings against that license, perhaps to revoke it. Sometimes those things get settled prior to the actual revocation. They correct the problem that is the reason for the protest. But the standard is if a local governing body protests renewal of a license, the board has to find that protest to be arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. So if they've got, basically, the way I interpret that when I explain it to people, if you've got a reason, even if it's not necessarily a really great reason, but it's some reason for a local governing body to protest renewal of a license, the board is probably going to go along with the local governing body.
Okay. Oh, I was just looking for some statistic of the number of times that happened.
It happens rarely. We can't really tell you too much. We've got a rare one. I'd say maybe once every 5 years we get. I mean, we do get them for taxes. That's, and I don't have a number on that, but that's routine. Someone gets fined in their taxes. Renewal gets protested. It usually gets remedied very quickly. So that kind of inflates it. But for something other than taxes, it's very rare. Maybe once every 5 or 6 years we get a local government protest on a renewal.
Representative Ledoux?
If this bill were passed, would people still be able to, number one, bring their own liquor to the lodges, or number two, would the lodge owners still be able to offer their customers without paying for it? Would they be able to offer their customers beverages?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Meyer.
I'd like to ask Mr. Griffin to answer that since he's on the enforcement side. But it's my understanding that my gut feeling is that yes, that you could still bring your own, and that yes, if they wanted to provide it free, that they'd be able to too. But if they can get this license and at this reasonable rate, I think if they want to have alcoholic beverages, they're going to go ahead and get this license and get the revenue from it. But Doug, what's the real answer?
Well, it's going to come down. I can't give you a really cut and dried answer. I guess I would think that maybe we do need to address that. Presently, of course, we don't allow people to bring alcohol onto a licensed premise. Say you bring your own alcohol into a bar, there is the provision, the one provision we have for corkage.
Yeah, thank you.
Berg's on the line. He'll be familiar with that. The one exception where we allow people to bring alcohol onto a premises, and it's all done with the permission of the licensee. And I think that's probably where I would come down on this, Representative Ledoux, through the chair, is that I think I would kind of leave that to the discretion of the lodge owner about whether people are allowed to bring their own alcohol. I don't see any big problem with it you may have somebody coming in from Germany or some other foreign country, and they have a special beverage that they want to enjoy, a vintage wine or something. So there could be all kinds of reasons why someone wants to bring some of their own alcohol, even though you provide it. I don't see any real harm in allowing that. In terms of, we may need to make a provision similar to the corkage language to address that. So again, it's another complicating factor.
Representative Meyer, because of the uncertainty of these other alcoholic beverages, did you bring samples so the committee can understand better of these delicious German wines?
Jägermeister.
part of the concern, Mr. Chairman, is I've had discussions with people. Sometimes it's very difficult to bring your own alcohol because to get to some of these lodges, you are traveling through a dry village. So it creates challenges there. So that's where people even wanted to bring their own. It's not so bad once you got to the lodge, but perhaps in transit you would actually be technically violating the law by bringing alcohol in and through a dry village. So it can be challenging to bring your own alcohol. So that's another issue. And again, that's where the lodge owner would know that, and could probably be in the best position to decide whether that was a good thing or not to allow someone to do that. But that's one. I don't think it causes any public harm to allow someone to bring some of their own alcohol in and perhaps to consume in their room or to take out on the boat with them or something like that. And then maybe for a fee, like a corkage fee, they could be served that beverage with their meals if they want to bring a special wine. So, you know, that's a complicating thing that I think we could deal with, and I don't know whether you want to get down into that nitty-gritty here with the legislation, but that could occur. That issue could occur. Representative Ledoux is perceptive to raise that issue.
Okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep public testimony open, and I'll take it upon myself, just having an interest and background in this. We'll work together over the next couple of days, and I think we can bring the bill back. Representative Roekberg's staff, Heather, is here, and I know that she brought an amendment for Representative Roekberg. Out of courtesy to him, we'll bring it back so he can address that one, and then he can, you know, have a fair chance to talk to the committee about it and Representative Meyer, whether that's applicable to the bill or not. But thanks for always, she prepares such good amendments, everything well in advance, so that's appreciated. It'll be in the file. Representative Meyer, did you have any last comments before we hold the bill?
Mr. Chairman, there's just a couple comments made here that I'd like to address.
Sure.
First of all, We were passed a note from that Bob Klein with Brown Jug was not going to be able to testify today, and I know he wanted to. In fact, this bill is basically their idea. They're the ones that brought this to my attention. And I think that's going to also help in the enforcement side. You know, I don't know how much Brown Jug sends out to the throughout the state, but they got to be one of the larger distributors or wholesalers. And they're concerned that they may be sending out the alcohol to areas that aren't licensed to be selling this. And so I think they will also help ABC and public safety as far as making sure that these places are legit that have this.
Holding the bill is good for them for Bob to call and testify this week as well.
I think so. And then you mentioned getting comments from CHAR, and we haven't done that. Although Brown Jug is a member, they certainly don't represent the whole body, and we'll get in touch with them also. Having spent 8 years on the assembly, there are times where we do protest licenses that have been troublesome. One that comes to mind off the top of my head is the Hub Bar. But typically in the Anchorage urban areas, you hate to pull the license because there's just a limited amount of them. So this $2,500 license now may be worth $75,000. So usually you try to work with the operator first before you have the license removed. But certainly I would think if there's a lodge that's causing problems, that somebody will notify us or notify the ABC board. I think that's all the comments I had, Mr. Chairman.
Great. I think it's workable. We'll keep the public testimony open and bring the bill back this week once we have a little bit more input and Representative Roper's present and Cott and hopefully Crawford's back so we can have more dialogue. Thanks for your courtesy and presentation, and we'll see you on Wednesday.